What's going on, Lions? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. I am your host, Gavin Rushnow, and today we will be reviewing the Inter-Miami match that just happened. It's a couple hours after the final whistle, after Nani's amazing final goal, 97th minute. And before we get started analyzing the match, as we always do around here, I'd just like to quickly thank our sponsor, Cappy Subs. You can call them to order over the phone at 407-647-9099, or you can order online at CappiesSubsFL.com, all one word, CappiesSubsFL.com. Please make sure to leave a five-star review, as we will be reading them out on the podcast. And with that, Daniel, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm feeling so good. Chase, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm happy as can be. How are you doing?
I mean, I just said it. I'm feeling fantastic. My heart is still thumping hours after the goal. I don't know, man. It's crazy. And Adam, how are you feeling tonight?
Three fucking points, man.
Our first three points this season. Yeah, screaming in your bed. Our first 3 points this season. Oscar Pereira's first 3 points as manager. And let's get started. Let's get started on the game. Let's not get started on the game. Let's get started with the black movement before the game. I thought that was extremely, extremely powerful, and I just wanted to applaud the coalition of the players for doing that. I think it was an amazing moment. I even tweeted out that was the most powerful event in MLS history. That was amazing. Adam, what do you have to say about it?
8 minutes and 46 seconds is a long time, huh?
Mm-hmm. Were they there for 8 minutes?
That's what it was, yeah.
Okay. It felt like less.
The broadcast wasn't that much, but I think the entire display was there for 8 minutes, 46 seconds.
Mm.
And yeah, it was extremely powerful. And, you know, it is, I've never seen an organization that high profile in any sector make that kind of statement before. It was surreal.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get started right away here with the lineup. We started in not a 4-4-2 Orlando City intern. We started off in a clear 4-2-3-1. Galese in goal, Moutinho at left back, Janssen and Carlos, the pair at the center backs, Juan at right back. We then had the double pivot, surprisingly, of Yuri Rosell and Urso. And then on the left, we had Nani, which we'll talk about later. Not really happy about that. Pereira in the middle, Mueller on the right, and Dom Dwyer up top. Daniel, when you first looked at the lineup, what was going through your head?
I wanted to meet the intern. I want to meet them and I want to shake their hand. I want to buy them a drink. And I want to smash the glass over their head. Because your lineups. I mean, I know what they're trying to do, but it's like, come on, 4-4-2, honestly. No, it's funny. I think it's funny how all the MLS teams kind of try to mess up their lineups to try and confuse everybody. It doesn't confuse us because we're just geniuses, but yeah. Honestly, I was really happy with the lineup. I felt that it was our strongest team. I was a little bit concerned about Moutinho at left back, just because I felt, you know, we're playing quite a positive lineup, and I felt that, you know, we might be a little bit weak there. But all in all, it was very well balanced. I was happy to see Rosell back in there and Urso next to him. I think that was a nice little combination on paper, and I was happy we had four attack-minded players in the starting lineup. So yeah, I was very happy.
Yeah, I was most surprised about Mendes not being in there, but when I kind of thought about it before the game, it made perfect sense. Yuri Rosell is much more defensive than Mendes. I know on paper it doesn't sound like that, but Yuri Rosell's starting position, as we saw today, was very deep. Mendes's is a little bit higher, and apparently Urso's is very high. I wanted to, I know that it's kind of coaches' orders. It's not just the players, but sometimes the players do factor into this, and Rosell's always had a deep deeper starting position. I wanted to start, though, the conversation off with Urso's starting position. I don't know about you guys, and Chase, this question's going to you. I don't know about you, but I noticed Urso would be very high up the pitch, kind of on the right side, maybe 5, 10, 15 yards even away from Yuri Rosell sometimes. And almost like it was like a diagonal line between Yuri Rosell and Urso. And then Urso's main job was to make those inside runs in that channel. And Juan looked to find him multiple times. That was a definite game plan. Did you see Urso kind of making those runs and starting higher up the pitch? And how do you think that affected our game plan moving the ball from back to front? Because I think we struggled with that early on in the game.
Yeah, you know, full disclosure for me, I watched the game with a few friends, so you guys are probably much more inclined to all the details here in the game. But I definitely noticed Urso was another body that we had forward quite a lot, and the ball did find his way to him a decent amount of times. And he, like anybody, wasn't necessarily up to standards. We knew that was going to happen coming into this tournament. But I was interested in the way that he was deployed, because he's somebody... you know, I think that we've said before that maybe he's an individual that can pop up with a couple goals, especially from set pieces and corners. But we always kind of associate him as a player who's maybe more defensive first. You know, defense is his first responsibility as a midfielder, and then maybe kind of shifting the ball upfield. But he was definitely kind of all throughout the pitch. Like, there was a few times where we did see him. He was a little bit deeper, and he you know, I can't point to a time where maybe he left us out. So that's obviously a good thing. And I was happy and interested, and maybe you guys might be able to have a little bit more to talk about this, but I was happy that we were willing to commit more men forward, because I think especially with Rodolfo Pizarro being out, which I'm sure we'll talk about before, that was kind of a sign that we were going to have most of the ball and that maybe we can commit a couple guys forward. And I don't know if that was the game plan no matter what, or if that was kind of a tactical change once we saw Inter Miami's lineup. But I like the concept of... kind of overloading a back line if we can.
Well, it worked. We almost got a goal off of it if Dom could hit a sitter. You know, that goal came off of, and that was in the early part of the game when Urso was making those diagonal runs in the channel, and the ball got to Mauricio Pereira, who had a fantastic game, by the way. The ball got to Pereira. He found Chris Mueller making a late run there, hit him perfectly. And decent strike, but Robles is also really good. Dom just needs to hit that in. Like, that overload tactic worked. Just need to finish.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys want to talk about that missed opportunity. I know a couple of people were saying that it was a chance that I think the commentators were as well. It's a chance that, you know, it would have been tough to put away. It came up on him too fast. He wasn't able to get set. Did you guys think that was maybe a missed opportunity or what?
There's no excuse. He's a professional striker and he's a poacher.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
I do think it comes up fast on him. That's just my opinion. Maybe it's because I played striker and I've had those kind of instances where the ball bounces to you quickly and it just rolls under your feet. But as a professional player, maybe, yeah, there is no excuse. So finishing was definitely the issue there, as it has been in the past. But Chase, I think you brought up a good point about the fact that we were in their half and pressing really well and really pushing forward. The thing is we didn't do that the first 10 minutes. So the first 10 minutes, we were extremely poor, in my opinion, because I think we did set up to kind of pretend like Pizarro was there, even though we knew he wasn't going to be. We sat very deep. We were compact. We were feeling our way into the game, it looked like. And Miami were coming on to us. They were really the better team in the opening phase of the game. And then this is where I'm really, really happy with Oscar Pereja. He switched it. He switched it. He pushed us forward. He put us high into their area. We started high pressing like crazy. And not only were we high pressing like just in there, we were doing it effectively. We had multiple bodies around the ball. We were winning the second balls after we weren't doing that in the first 10 minutes. And that was the first instance that I was really happy with Oscar Pereja, just seeing that tactical switch. And we were on top until the water break. And Daniel, this question's going to you. How we've seen in other leagues around the world how important the water breaks and the little timeouts have been. How important do you think this water break was to seeing us, go from almost dominating the game to kind of getting pushed back after Diego Alonso seemed to make some tactical switches of his own.
Yeah, the water breaks are kind of unprecedented. I mean, you see them occasionally in Florida just because of the heat, but everywhere else I've never seen them until this year. So it certainly makes a big difference. The coach sees the game from a completely different vantage point. Players do not have 360-degree vision, so he made his changes, I mean, and he did what a decent coach does, to be fair. He turned the tide of the game and adjusted it. It's certainly a factor. I heard a story in England as well where I think the Brentford coach even went as far as pulling out a tactics board and readjusted his entire formation during the water break. Apparently infringed on a rule there doing it, but it did turn the game for them as well. I'm kind of hoping it's not a permanent addition. I'd like for the game to kind of just go back to the regular 45-minute flow, you know, like it was before. But it certainly helps. I mean, it's like a timeout in the NFL, isn't it?
Look, if we don't have the water break there, I think we take the momentum and possibly score a goal.
You're probably right. I completely agree. And you can argue that with any long stoppage, really. The injury to their guy as well was a stoppage in the game that favored Orlando. Inadvertently. To Reyes.
Exactly. Yeah, that's actually exactly where I was going next. The injury to Reyes, we were extremely poor before that. We actually conceded the goal. And, you know, after that, we seemed to be okay. And then obviously we improved and we got the goal. And then more and more and more stuff happened. But the injury to Reyes really took the wind out of Miami's sails.
Well, they changed shape. They went to a back four now from the 3-4-3 they were playing. They had to go to a back four formation, so it unsettled them quite a bit.
That was also when they put Pizarro in, though. Interesting that you say took the wind out of Miami's sails, and they put on their best player. And then,
but we dealt with him very well
because of Cephas Mendes. Yes.
Yeah, they kind of cut off their nose to spite the face, though, because they put on the, you know, the marquee player, but they took their defensive solidarity was also taken away to do that. Even if it was unplanned and circumstantial, it still was one sacrifice made for something else.
And again, I was very happy with Oscar Pareja there, because they bring on Pizarro and we instantly bring on Mendes. It was like 3-4 minutes later. I mean, it was like it looked like it was planned. Honestly, he couldn't have known that Pizarro wasn't going to play, but it looked like it was planned that when Pizarro came on, Mendes was going to come on and he was going to deal with him. And I think what Adam was saying before the game happened, you know, Mendes or Yuri, basically Mendes, we were saying Mendes or Urso because we thought they were going to be in there, but Mendes or Yuri, you need to watch Pizarro at all times and somebody be on him. And I thought we really did a good job of that. But the next player I want to talk about is Dom Dwyer.
fucking Dwyer.
I'm going to be honest, guys. I was not that mad about his first half. I think he was really, as Adam has said before, he is a really emotional player. And I think he was really caught up in the emotions. And I personally thought the fouls he was doing were smart fouls. There was one where the player had a chance to clear it or find a good pass, or I 100% can't remember. I haven't rewatched the game yet, but it was just a smart foul. And I remember saying that's a smart foul from Dom. I think the other fouls was just more get in your head, get them wound up. Hopefully they make a mistake. So Chase, I'm going to go to you. I personally liked Dwyer's first half, although that was just because of his contributions in terms of the fouling and the emotional side of it. But I do think his technical side was very poor. So I'm going to go to you on this one, Chase. How did you see his first half overall?
I think that, you know, what you kind of just said shows how far expectations of Dom Dwyer as a DP striker on this squad has fallen. Daniel, I know you said before that there was a time where maybe he had like 3 touches and 2 fouls in the game, like 20 minutes in or something like that. And I mean, I can understand, like even I kind of touched about this on the last one, like trying to draw yellow cards, trying to give kind of like a hostile energy almost to this game, because that certainly can favor attackers. especially if you have kind of a younger, inexperienced back line, which aside from Fiegel, you know, their back three was made of young guys who maybe you could get in their head and draw out a foul. But I don't personally think that it's good enough to be that uninvolved in the play. And you know, I get that the ball kind of came up on him fast when he had a chance to kind of slot home a rebound inside the six. But, you know, he's a player that we all know him as a poacher. And he needs to take those opportunities, especially because we've seen that maybe they're not going to come around as much as we would like him. He doesn't get in the right spaces or create enough chances to give up, you know, an opportunity when it presents itself to him. I just wish that he was more involved in play. I wish that he took his chances, even more difficult chances when he had the opportunity to him. And I think that there is value in kind of like the shithousery, whatever you would like to call it, for a striker. But I also think that he has to be maybe providing a little bit something more. And, you know, obviously it's well known that we all kind of rate Benji highly, which maybe he didn't necessarily, he didn't have an awful game, but there were times when it was very clear that he wasn't a winger. I think that if we started him centrally, he could have maybe gave this back line an issue because he could have done well to get in behind or something like that. But yeah, Dom Dwyer, you know, maybe this is kind of an unfair assessment and I don't know what you guys think, but I didn't think maybe he, I just thought it was a poor game overall personally.
I'd say that's fair. Especially to your point where it's like, that lowers our expectations of a DP striker, especially when we have someone like Nani on the touchline.
Yeah.
For a lot of the game. And I know Nani had a massive impact on this game, getting an assist and a goal. But like, and his assist did come from the touchline, to be fair. But when you have someone like Nani on the touchline, I just want him closer to goal. I would rather see Mueller on the touchline, Nani getting closer to the goal, and then Dwyer up top, a striker up top, not Dwyer, but a striker up top.
Yeah, it's a bit of a catch 22 almost, because I think that Nani, if he is played centrally, which I didn't look at Twitter too much, but I saw that you put a tweet kind of like how you were a little dismayed that he was playing out wide. But, you know, we know that he's one of the only players other than Mauricio, if we want to play him out wide, but obviously it's probably the same issue, who can play in a ball like that, that can just unlock a back line with a cross, put the ball across the six and find a man at the back post. But if we play him centrally, we're probably going to have a much more fluid and flowing attack because playing him centrally gives him the ability to spread it out and to try to find players behind the back line. So it's a bit of a, you know, like I said, it's a bit of a catch 22. And I see why maybe Oscar kind of values him as a winger, but I don't know.
I don't
agree that centrally is his best position now.
Well, I don't necessarily want him centrally, because when you're a central striker, you're taking a beating from behind. I mean, yes, Dwyer was giving, but he did get a couple pushes in the back. You know, your back is to goal, and I don't think Nani excels at that, you know, jumping in the air, trying to chest the ball, get control of the ball with people at him under pressure. He can definitely do it, but it's not his skill set 100%. Nani, I want him to play in that inside left channel.
Yeah,
you know, get in there and, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
get in there and get towards goal. Instead, he's sitting on the touchline on the outside left channel, and I'm not 100% a fan of that. But let's move on from Nani. We'll talk about him later when we get into the second half. I want to quickly talk about the quick negative of the game for me, and that was how we struggled to cope with their attack. I think that throughout the match, once they bypassed our press after we decided to start pressing, their attack was very direct. They were looking to go towards goal, and they really should have had a goal early on. And I know that wasn't them necessarily bypassing the press, because that was before we decided to start pressing. I'm talking about the Agudelo chance, by the way. But after that, after they bypassed our press, their attack looked potent, and I didn't think we looked comfortable dealing with it. Adam, do you agree with that?
Sort of. I think there's a pretty easy fix, actually. Bench Antonio Carlos.
He wasn't great.
Horrid game. Absolutely.
You think so?
Off. Oh, yeah. So on that chance you mentioned, watch that again. Antonio Carlos is keeping Agudelo onside. The rest of the backline is all in line with Janssen, who's trailing him for an offside trap. and to get like that cross basically ineligible. Carlos, after Juan slips, so he's out of the picture. Carlos thinks that it's a good idea for him to come out of the box and lumber, because he's not a quick defender. He's big and he's powerful and he can body someone off of it, but he's not fast. So he thinks that it's a great idea for him to go make a diagonal run and try to like throw himself at the cross that goes right over his head, and he keeps Agudelo on side. He did the exact wrong thing. They're like, fam, just stay in line with Janssen and let him handle it. But no, like Janssen was so good in this. Janssen was as good this game as Antonio Carlos was bad. And then on the goal, he just flat out got beat. So I think put Schlegel in there, let him take Carlos's spot. He can't be worse.
Schlegel at right center back though.
Who cares?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
is Schlegel left-footed?
Yes.
I don't care. He's not going to get.
I mean,
three times a game.
He is. I'd say he's more ambidextrous, where he can do it with both feet, but he favors his left, I believe.
Yeah, fine. If Carlos is going to play like that, we would be lucky. We were lucky to give up one goal. We would be lucky to get away with giving up one goal if Carlos is going to play like that in every game.
Yeah, I'd have to look at it again. One positive thing I thought about Carlos's performance.
He also could have easily got a yellow card.
Was the foul. You beat me to it there, Adam. I thought we fouled really smart in this game. Daniel, I'm going to go to you on this question. I felt that we had a lot of smart tactical fouls. We fouled outside, not in too dangerous of areas. We had a couple on the left-hand side, but that was more Moutinho, as you like to talk about. And just... I felt that, or not as you like, but as you talked about earlier with Moutinho, I felt that a lot of our fouls were smart tactical fouls that I've never really seen us do before, like Antonio Carlos's, because he's getting beat to the ball there from Lewis Morgan. And if he doesn't foul him, Lewis Morgan is behind him. He's on the ground, or he's not on the ground. He's totally out of the play, and he kind of has a run at goal, basically. So what did you think about our fouling in this game?
I don't usually like to talk about fouling as a positive.
Right.
When Orlando did it, it landed us in trouble, I felt, a lot of the time. Moutinho's was a certain yellow card. You know, we got the victimization tweets that, you know, from, oh yeah, well, we've got the yellow card, but his was a definite yellow, and he made it himself because of his bad positioning. Carlos's, I do see your point there. That's kind of a risk to take, but it was a necessary risk. Like you say, Morgan's getting past him, and if you don't do it, then he's got a clear one-on-one. So I understand. If he mistimed it or was the last man, then obviously it would have been a bigger problem, but I can accept the argument with Carlos. Dwyer's fouls, I don't even want to discuss. I'm just annoyed with that.
Udy actually had a great one after we scored the second goal.
One from Russo.
Yeah, on Pizarro.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic foul.
No, I mean...
In midfield.
I get the argument. I certainly agree with the one... for Antonio, for Carlos, because I think, like you said, it's a clear chance on goal if he doesn't do something. We've seen many players do it, so the one by Russell was a clear just one to eat up time, which we know. But Moutinho's was like a desperation one. You know, it was certainly not tactical nous in that. It was just like, damn it, I've made a mess here, I need to clean it up. So I get the point. I kind of half agree, half don't, but there you go.
Now, I think part of it was the ref really allowed physical play, and we really, really mm-hmm. leaned into that.
The ref was good. I thought this ref was really good. I mean, compared to pro standards, I thought we had a decent ref. He didn't treat it like it was a ballerina where you're not allowed to have contact with anybody. He let the game flow, and there was obviously some fouls, but he didn't seem to be concerned with having to stamp his mark on the game. And tackle the punch out of it. He let the game go, which I thought was good.
Yeah, now let's move on into the second half, really, and talk about all the stuff that happened there before we enter a new segment into the pod. The goal right after halftime for Inter Miami. Were we just asleep? Was it poor defensive play? Was it just overall just no one really paying attention? Like, what happened on that goal, do you think, Adam?
Antonio Carlos got beat. That's it.
You think it's all down to him?
I think so. Like, here's the thing. We're going to give up chances. There's no way that you play a game for 90 minutes and you don't let someone get a cross in. You don't let a pass get into the box. Antonio Carlos just, like, it was staggering how much of a liability he was in this game. Agudelo just pushed him out of the way, gotten behind, and slotted it home. And it was as easy as that. It was a good cross, but it wasn't one that Carlos couldn't have gotten in front of and shielded it off or cleared it out for a corner or whatever. Like, crosses are going to get in. Players are going to get in the box. You have to deal with them. And at that point, it's on you. You're center back. It's your job.
Yeah, just to echo what you're saying, MLS actually already uploaded the highlight to this game, so I was able to rewatch the goal. And Agudelo, it's not even like it's like a tricky piece of movement in the box or anything like that. He just absolutely loses Antonio Carlos, who doesn't necessarily look interested in tracking his man. And then even the cross, like you just said, like, just kind of confirming it's something he easily could have cleared. Like, he didn't even necessarily make too big of a lunge for it. It was that was completely down to Antonio Carlos, that goal right there.
Now, I actually thought Moutinho's defending one-on-one was a little suspect before the cross came in. Daniel, again, I know you've been talking about Moutinho, so do you want to jump in on that one?
I've always said he plays more like a midfielder, and what he did is the minute that ball came near him, he drifted right in field, following his guy, didn't make any impact on the guy, and they created the overload on that inside right channel. And of course, the cross comes in from that inside right channel. Carlos doesn't mop it up, and there's your goal. But they target that left hand side that we have. Most teams do. And his defending is just doesn't defend like a left back to me. He's more of a central player, and I think I've said it in nearly every podcast we have when we talk about tactics. But he drifts in field, and that's where the gaps came from. So it's kind of a dual problem, really. He created the chance, and then Carlos missed it. So
yeah, but who else were we playing over Moutinho?
Well, that's the problem. If we're going to go out and Schlegel could have done a job there. Kamal Miller, if he was available, would have been good.
If you have back three, then you have a lot more defending than sure. But if you just play the back four, then. If you have the back three, you still need your center backs to defend well, and Carlos isn't doing that.
Yeah, but if your left back just stays in line with his other defenders, if he just doesn't get caught in field, it helps the problem. It's a dual thing. I agree with your point on Carlos entirely. I just felt that the mistake doesn't happen if he doesn't, you know, get caught drifting in field.
Yeah, it's not like you're gonna block every single cross.
Yeah, but he was nowhere near the cross.
Yeah, I know he was nowhere near the cross, but also wasn't a particularly special cross.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah. Well, are you guys are saying like the issue was more that because like he was kind of towards the center of the field upon their goal because he just kind of got dragged inside by a winger, and then he was just nowhere to be found, right?
Obviously, yeah. Both Moutinho and Carlos are at fault, but if we're assigning like a percentage of the blame, I'm putting like 80% on Carlos.
I'd go 60 Carlos and 40 Moutinho. I think you got the chicken and the egg argument here, you know?
Yeah. The semantics both before.
Yeah, because like Carlos, or not Carlos, your Rossell gets dragged by a very good run from one of their players to the right. And so Rossell's totally out of the play. And that's due to that player. And then Moutinho is tasked with following the player with the ball. And I don't think he does enough. I don't know if it was because he may have had tired legs straight after halftime. He was just being asleep. I don't know. But he has to share a portion of the blame. And I'm not 100% certain on Carlos. I wasn't, like I said, I didn't see Adam's point. in terms of I didn't see it with my own eyes. So I do believe that if what Adam is saying is correct, then that Antonio Carlos has to share a portion of the blame for that goal. But after the goal, like we talked about earlier, Miami were on top by far. They were all over us. It was not looking good for us. A lot of people were thinking, uh-oh, here we go, same Orlando City. And then the injury happens to Reyes. I hope he gets better. I hope his breathing is back to normal. I don't really want to talk about it. I don't want to get into the discussion of was it intentional? Was it intentional? Was it not? That's just not something I really want to get caught up with. I just hope he gets better, and that's the gist of it. So after that, I felt that we were better. Like we said, they had to switch it. They took away their defensive solidarity, and they brought on Pizarro, and we dealt with Pizarro really well when we brought on Mendez. And what was our other substitute? Was it who came on with Mendez?
Tesho came on for Dom.
Tesho came on for – that's right. That's exactly where I was going next.
That was a fantastic sub.
Tesho Akindele played his socks off today. He was so, so important to us being – a force in this game after the injury, because his movement off the ball was amazing. He was moving everywhere. His touch with his back to goal was great. He was laying it off. He was being available. I think Dom Dwyer's problem was he wasn't being available. Tesho was being available. I thought Tesho had an amazing game today. Chase, what did you think about Tesho's performance?
Yeah, I mean, like we kind of talked about with Dom, how like he wasn't really overly involved in the game. It's just Tesho was dropping a bit. He was getting on the ball. There was a time, you know, Chris Mueller played in a nice little ball, like a lifted cross kind of that maybe he should have put away. But you know, I can't criticize him too hard for that. But yeah, overall, I thought Tesho was decent. I mean, and even if he's just an average player, like I feel like certainly at least for this game, it was an improvement on, you know, the other striker we had going for us.
Now, Daniel, you said something earlier about he's the better player for the system to me. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, he's Vakindeli, he's got a presence about him. I feel he's often gotten more grief than he deserves. He did get a decent amount of goals for us, but he's a good sort of target striker. Like he's just someone that defenders are going to watch because he's quite a big guy. He's got a good presence about him in the box and having that distraction for defenders. I mean, if they were playing against Dwyer, who was in more form, I mean, we might have done better. But with Akindele, they have to watch him because he's just very, you know, very strong, and it creates space naturally for other players to get involved. And I feel like if you're playing any one striker system, you need someone with a bit of everything. There's obviously not many strikers out there that are perfect for that system, but he has a little bit of goal scoring ability. He's able to get between the lines a bit more. He's got an okay first touch and a good hold up presence. And I feel like he's like the number six, but of strikers. He'll do little things that you don't notice, but other players will benefit from. And to me, that's what you want in a 4-2-3-1 system.
All right, now let's move on to the goal. Did we score before or after the water break?
I don't remember.
I think it was after, because I remember that after a break, we really started to focus our play down the left. I thought that was another Pareja smart switch. He kind of noticed that Nani versus Nilis was not a great battle.
Sure?
Because Nilis is straight out of college, and Luis Nani is obviously Luis Nani. And I think that we really overloaded that side. We really leaned into Joel Moutinho, Luis Nani over there. Pereira started to really focus down that side. I believe Mendez was kind of floating over there as well. So, and the goal comes from that side. The goal comes from Nani taking the ball, going all the way up the touchline, beating Nilis, and putting a picture perfect ball into Chris Mueller at the back post. And yeah,
sex ball, maybe, if you will.
Sex ball, yes. and maybe Luis Robles can do better about it, but again, it's coming at him fast. It's right in front of him, and Chris Mueller gets the goal. And when I say I am so happy for Mueller to get that goal, is ridiculous. He's been talking about how confident he's been when he was on the MLS UK show. I thought Chris Mueller overall had an amazing game, but I'm just so happy that he backed up his talk with a goal. And I think that he showed today that he can be an effective starter on this team. Chase, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that he might even be kind of the biggest success from this game. Like, I think there's a real conversation to be had right now of whether or not Chris Mueller is like this is the season. Like, I know we got broken up a little bit, but this is the season that he's ready to take a big step. And, you know, our first chance in the game obviously came where he brought down kind of earlier in the first half. I'm sure y'all remember where he brought the ball down. He played it to, I think, Pereira, and then he kind of came around and found some space on the left. And then he opened his hips to try to go to the back post and forced a good save out of Robles. And he put in a fantastic cross to Tesho that maybe could have been turned away. He very easily could have had a couple more goal contributions in this game. And, you know, he's still kind of in the infancy of his career. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is like the year where we start to kind of change how we think about Chris Mueller, because I know a lot of us thought that maybe he was best as a super sub and he was an individual who needed to get more goal contributions into his game. And so far from this season, you know, as odd as this season has been with how we had such a huge break in between it, you know, he has 2 goals in 3 games and he very easily could have had more goal contributions. I thought he played fantastic. He was even pressing well. It was a fairly complete performance from just a young player that maybe all of the weight of expectation would be put on him, but he certainly rose to the challenge, I feel like, in this first game.
All right, well, after the goal, it really seemed like the attacks started to fizzle. It started to become more of an even game. Alonso reacted to our dominance on the left side, and it was really a tactical battle between Oscar Pereja and Alonso, and it was really deserving of a 1-1 draw. But Alonso's men, Inter Miami, were really coming forward and really searching for that final goal. And they were really on top. I actually thought that they were going to score. I think I even put out a tweet. I said, we need to survive this because they are really coming after us. And I think my exact words were, they are in the ascendancy because they were the better team at the moment. And then it happens. We get the ball out to Moutinho. The only reason he's on is because of his attacking potential. He puts the ball in. Akindele is there. The ball bounces off of him. It goes to Nani, and our main man puts it in the back of the net. Adam, I want you to walk me through your emotions when that ball went in the back of the net.
I screamed, fuck yes, get in, let's fucking go. I love you, Nani. Fuck you, Miami. I love what you said about Tesho. Tesho was there. But like, and he was there the entire game. On Mueller's goal, this is one of the things that Twelman actually pointed out well, was Tesho made a fantastic run off the defender to clear Mueller for that goal. But yeah, Tesho was there. And he involved himself in the play, and it paid dividends. You don't always have to be scoring goals as a striker, but you have to contribute. And he contributed. And it was fantastic. And obviously, it wasn't Nani's prettiest goal. It wasn't his most impressive goal. But big players show up in big moments. And this is a gigantic moment. And that win, those 3 points are so much better than the draw. And it's just a moment full of emotion. And our friend of the show, Julia Poe, said that that Oscar Pereja was super emotional and joining his team in the huddle and super excited. And you could just tell that goal meant more than – it was honestly quite an underwhelming goal for how it was scored. It was a bounce off and Nani poached it, whatever. But that goal meant so much more than just the highlight.
Oh, it was massive. It was a massive goal. And the last thing I want to point out about this game is the way we closed it out. We all saw last season, we let goals come in after going up late, we would allow a goal. And in the dying moments while we were defending a lead, and I tweeted out, I said, look, Pereja needs to show us that he is different than O'Connor. He needs to see out this lead. I know it was only 3 to 4 minutes, and that's not a lot of time. And we will need more evidence of this when we're up 1-0 with 45 minutes to go. But at the end of the day, we saw out this lead. How important was it to get these 3 points, Daniel?
It's a big importance because there's two sides to the game. There's a glamorous side, which is the, you know, the winning goal and the flair and the moments of quality. But there's the mental side, which is, you know, being able to grind when the chips are against you and being able to hold on and everything like this. It's a small learning experience, especially when you've kind of learned a habit of losing games or losing points at the last minute. So it's a massive, importance, really, especially being a national TV game and a lot of people watching. You could give them a lot of confidence, you know, if they just take it in the stride and just go to the next game and try to learn more lessons, they're gonna be fine. But you've got to start off on the right foot. That's what they've done today.
All right, now let's enter a new segment into the podcast. Similarly to how when we're previewing games, we are going to be entering our keys to the match. When we're reviewing games, we're going to be talking about our studs and our duds. Thank you to Adam for that name. It's a great name. Basically, we're each going to name one player that we thought had a good game, and we see them in a positive light, and one player that had a bad game, and we saw them in a negative light today. It's not saying we hate the player. It's not saying we love the player. It's just saying this player had a good game, basically. And Daniel, I'm actually going to go to you first for your stud and your dud, and for you to explain why really quickly, because I do know you have to leave soon.
My stud is going to be Robin Jansen, because you guys are already going to pick the other guy, the other obvious candidates. So I'll pick Robin Jansen, because he did a very steady and quiet job at the back. I think he marshalled that defence really, really well. And even though there's no clean sheet, I don't think that reflects on him at all. I don't recall him making a single mistake. And there's even a couple of times he was confident enough to bring the ball out of the back and play it, which I like to see from a defender. As for the dud, I would probably say Junior Urso. And not so much because he had a particularly bad game. He just didn't effectuate the game as much as I would have liked. Like, I can look at most players in that team today, and I think with him and probably Dwyer, you can't really say they had much of a positive influence on the game. It's probably not his fault. I mean, he's in the same boat as everybody else. He's not played for a long time. Probably still finding his feet. Still got to get used to this climate and to his teammates. So it's not entirely his fault, and I expect he'll play the next game. But based off tonight's performance, he would be the dud for me.
All right. Chase, I'm going to go to you next.
Yeah, I talked about him a bit before, but I'm going to go with Chris Mueller, because I think a lot of our most dangerous attacking opportunities came from him, whether it was his early chance in the game or him delivering a good cross to Tesho, and obviously ultimately his goal, which he did well to arrive late in the back post. And, you know, Robles may or may not have been able to do better with it, but he was able to put the ball in frame. And, you know, once you do that, anything can happen. And he's just, like we know, he's a bolt of energy, and he's also a very surprisingly knowledgeable and technical player. He was able to shift into the middle if he needs to. He's even, you know, able to find himself on the left side and not hurt the team at all while being out of position. So, yeah, great game by Chris, in my opinion. And if I had to go for a dud, once again, it's someone I've already talked about. It was just Dom Dwyer. I didn't think he had nearly enough effect on the game, and I think whenever a ball was kind of played to him, he's too easy to go down whenever the ball is played into him, and that's something that I wish he would, you know, among many things, I wish he would kind of change about his game, maybe try to stay with the play a bit more and get involved. But yeah, I'm sure most of y'all would agree that he was just overall poor. So my dud for the game is Dom Dwyer.
And Adam, who was your stud and who was your dud?
I have two tied for my stud, but I'm going to talk about one.
Yes.
First, actually, everyone listening, I want you to say something with me. You're going to sound it out. We're going to go, Adam was right. Go listen to that last episode. My key to the match was Sebas Mendes shutting down Rodolfo Pizarro, and he did that. He loved the thing. It was, I was, because I had highlighted it before and That was my takeaway from the film study I did. I was watching that super close up. Sebas Mendez is a defensive genius. He is. He wasn't necessarily man-marking Pizarro, but every time Pizarro wanted to impact the game and use his quick dribbling to get into dangerous space, Mendez was right there, or he was directing someone right there. And he was pickpocketing the ball. The yellow card, I actually didn't think it was deserving of a yellow. It was just a kind of a regular foul. But he... Good defensive midfielders get yellow cards sometimes. It happens because they're involved in the game and they're making challenges. And that's what he did. And he wasn't afraid of Pizarro. Like, I've seen other midfielders and defenders be afraid of Pizarro. He stepped to the challenge and he delivered. I also love Mauricio Pereira. He's a dog. He's quickly becoming one of my favorite players in the team. But I have to give my shout to Sebas Mendez for a fantastic defensive effort. My dud pains me to say this because everyone loves the guy, but Juan wasn't that great. We've expected him to use his pace more down the right side. And, you know, he didn't have a horrible game. He didn't have any other than the slip on the chance that Agudelo missed, but which I guess is a pretty bad error, but it's not like egregious, like he was playing bad. He just slipped. His final ball wasn't there, and it's not a great skill of his, but it's usually like at least a little more decent than it was. I can't think of really any passes or crosses of consequence he had. He didn't find his way behind the defense like we normally see him. He didn't use his pace like he normally does. So, I've ripped on Carlos enough. I'm going to give him a break for this one. So Juan is going to be my dud, but you know, we'll see him next time, and he'll probably have a better game.
I do think your Juan pick is interesting because I thought Juan had a pretty average game. I do remember he did have one cross where it was when he found Nani on the back post, and it was a little far away from goal, but Nani tried to chip Robles with his header, and I thought he could have done better, try to power it at Robles and hope that it either takes a deflection or that Robles parries it in the middle and hope for a rebound goal. So I thought Nani was poor on that. But other than that, yeah, Juan was pretty average. I do also think he was very tired come around 50, probably 60 minutes. He looked knackered, and I thought we were going to bring
that from him.
Well, that's because this is the first game back.
Yeah, but yeah, like I said, I think he wasn't his normal self, and with conditioning, he'll get back to it.
Yeah,
and we'll see the Juan we all know and love. He just wasn't out there tonight.
Yeah. All right. So I'm gonna quickly give you guys mine, and you guys left me two. The two that I picked, I thought were surely gonna be gone. So I'm gonna just say both of their names, and then I'm gonna I'm just gonna say the first one. So it's Akindele for me. He came on and instantly changed the match, in my opinion. His movement off the ball was amazing. And I'm also just really, really happy for him. His first two games this season were pretty poor. He didn't look like he impacted them that well. He got yanked. He got substituted both games, I believe. And I'm just really happy to see him bounce back today. He is surely in line for a start after that performance against Inter Miami. The other one I had was Rossell, just because I really liked what he did today. I thought he was going to be substituted when I saw Perea up, and I was kind of nervous that we were going to take him out because I thought he was having a fantastic game back there. I thought he was doing everything right, and he was our deepest line midfielder. So Rossell was my other pick, but Akindele for me was the stud. Negative, I'm actually going to go with Perea. I was actually really excited to see him come off the bench and make an impact and come on and use his fresh legs and really do something, and he barely touched the ball. He didn't really impact anything. I think he made a couple tackles. He may have made a couple of passes, but for me, he just was almost invisible. And I know it's not right to have high expectations on a kid, but I did expect a little more out of his performance. All right, and with that is the end of part one. We will return in part two with your questions right after this. All right, and welcome back to part two, where we answer your questions from Twitter and Instagram, because I forgot to post on Facebook, even though nobody really follows me on Facebook anyway. All right, we are going to start with the our only question from Twitter, and that comes from @SpizzoTFL. Spot is his username, as I know him. And he says, I don't think either goal scored tonight is the sort of thing you can count on regularly. How does this team create more quality chances? ? Or is that something that has to wait another transfer window? So the first question is going to go to you, Daniel. Do you think that these sort of goals are the ones that we can count on regularly? And how do we create more quality chances?
I think we play a little more narrow. We start Pereira and Mueller and Nani. You know, you've got to have those three. We've got to have at least three or four attacking players in that lineup. You know, not like the O'Connor days where we had barely had any. They can certainly do it. I mean, I think that the key to keeping those chances going is to just constantly work on it. Chemistry will come with this team. It's not going to come immediately. It's going to be, I would say, 10 to 15 games before you start seeing a regular rhythm. But I think if they go out and sign a top-class striker, at the very least, then I think you'll see a decent amount of goals and you'll see these chances coming. We do need probably two players, the striker and another attacking midfielder. But a lot of it's just down to chemistry as well. I mean, we touched on this with Chris Mueller already, that he's already looking a little bit better and he could just be benefiting from better one-to-one coaching. You know, so it could just be as simple as that. You give some of these younger players more attention, give them more feedback, give them more chances to play. You don't drop them just after one bad game. You give them more opportunities and you might see more improvement that way as well. But that would be my recipe for maintaining this anyhow.
Yeah, I do think that it's a little bit harsh their spot, because our first goal is a normal goal. A player running up the left wing, putting in a very good cross, and somebody at the back post scoring. That's something that you see a lot in soccer. So I think that goal right there is the creation of a quality chance and putting it in the back of the net and it being executed correctly. The second goal is mayhem in the box. The ball gets floated in, it bounces around, it falls to our best player, and he puts it in the back of the net. So can we rely on the second goal? No, but it does happen in soccer. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, I also think that another thing to consider, obviously there might need to be a little bit of work done in the transfer market, but chemistry as well. But this is also just such a weird situation that I don't think anyone is going to be able to carve out like fantastic attacking opportunities consistently throughout the game. I think it's a bit harsh to, or not harsh, but it's, you know, I think that we're going to see a little bit of a dip in quality from every team personally.
Probably fair. It's also hard to play without a striker, you know. Like, I know the chances that you're thinking of, that it would be like the reliable chances, or the passing up the middle and Mauricio puts in a through ball to a striker and he slots it home. Yeah, we don't have that guy. Sorry.
Yeah, I actually think also to an extent, and I'll be real quick with this. Like on the second goal, like it was a lucky deflection off of Tesho or maybe even the center back, and it fell to Nani. But Nani did have the ball out wide, and he kind of came in and he played it into Tesho. Tesho slotted it back out wide, and then Zhao put in a cross kind of into a dangerous area, and it just wound up being a good opportunity that we ultimately took. So I think that maybe like mayhem in the box, I definitely get what you're saying, but I think that there's a little bit more to it than that. Like I think that there was a little bit of decent play before that caused the goal.
Yeah, I actually think that's a very good point, Chase. That makes it seem less of mayhem in the box, because we did have that build up. We did find our best crosser of the ball in Moutinho, and eventually the ball did land in the back of the net after some lucky bounces. On to our next question. It comes from evan.soris35 on Instagram. He says, we need to start playing our young players like Daryl DK. Kid just came out of college at the University of Virginia. Kid is a force to be reckoned with. And that's where he kind of ends his comment. So I'm just going to kind of create a question out of this. I know we've already talked about DK. I remember asking last episode if we think we will see DK in this tournament at all. But do you think now that Dom Dwyer really showed us what he has at his disposal so far in this last game? Obviously, we can't make total 100% assumptions off of this one game. But now that we kind of see what we have to work with Dom, do you think maybe DK might be sliding up the pecking order and might get that chance in this tournament? I'll start with Adam on this one.
Y'all need to cool it.
Yeah.
The sentence, he's just out of college and is a force to be reckoned with. Come on, man. I give the kid a chance to develop. Yeah, Dom had a bad game. We got guys behind him. Chris Mueller can play striker. Benji Michelle can play striker. Tesho Akindele has played striker for. It does play striker. We got guys before we get to DK. Yeah, we last year's draft pick Patino too. So people, I get play the kids. I love play the kids. Play Benji. He's a kid and he's ready to play. Play Mueller. He's a kid and he's ready to play. There's certain stages of development that you get to where you're ready to rely on a player to have a bigger role. DK is not there yet. It's not his fault. He's just come out of college. No one is Kyle Larin. Kyle Larin is the best rookie in the history of MLS. It's not close. Stop expecting DK to be Kyle Larin. Because I know that's where this is all coming from this fan base. Because we saw it literally our first year in the league. Yeah, we got super lucky. It's not going to happen again. Let the kid be a kid. You know, we'll probably see him at some point at the end of some match to sub on for Nani and close out a match or whatever, just to get him a few minutes and get it like his first professional cap and stuff like that. We're not going to see more of DK than that, and that's fine. He's got a long career ahead of him. He's talented, sure. He just needs to develop.
Yeah, well said, Adam.
It would be a bit unfair too to put him in right now when nobody is fresh, nobody has played for quite a long time. To expect a solid performance from someone who hasn't even played their first professional minutes. I know he played a bit in preseason, but his first professional regular season minutes. That would be poor coaching. Maybe if we're looking at kind of a late introduction, I could see it, but even still, I think that we should just like Oscar probably clearly sees a little bit in Tesho, and Tesho is a decent player. And even still, I would rather have Benji in front of him for now. I would like to maybe have DK get about 500 minutes this year. But yeah, I think Kyle Larin has kind of ultimately ruined the perception that people have on rookie, particularly rookie strikers in this league, or at least in this fan base, because like Adam said, he's the best rookie in the history of MLS. And if we ever get any player who is even half as good as him and can perform at that level, that's a blessing in and of itself. And DK is a good young player, but he's not someone to just put all of our hopes on at the moment. Definitely not.
All right, now our last question. There are only three questions today. We are recording literally right after the game, so I do understand it, but guys, try and get your questions in please. I would really appreciate that. Yeah, seriously, do better. Speaking of doing better, this question from O-Town Ultra on Instagram says, who played better, Dwyer or Akindele? And so I want all four of us at the same time to say the answer, because I think it's really obvious. So 3, 2, 1.
Akindele. Adam, I thought Dom Dwyer was going to have a fantastic tournament.
Yeah, me too.
And that is where we will leave it, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Please don't hesitate to let us know your thoughts on the Inter-Miami match, how massive it was for our team, how massive it was for our organization moving forward. I think it is a very positive step in the right direction. Maybe we will not be looked at as the worst team in Florida, because when Inter-Miami came in, it was all Miami, Miami, Miami. They're the big boys. They're the big boys. And we kind of stamped our foot down and said, no, we're taking control of this rivalry. I think that's another big thing that I forgot to talk about, just how important it is, in my opinion, that we got this win, in the sense that we still haven't beaten Atlanta United. And that's another hurdle we have to get over. But getting over this hurdle, I talked about it in my match preview on the blog. This was a mental breakthrough, in my opinion. We kind of broke through a barrier here because if we didn't win this game, it was, you haven't beaten either of your rivals at all. So, like, what's going on with you guys? And today we finally broke through that a little bit with beating Inter Miami. There is a sort of asterisk on it, but I really don't care. We beat them on a pitch in a fair game. Now it's time to do it against Atlanta United. But that's enough of me rambling. Like I said, please let us know your thoughts on the Inter Miami match. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review. Do the survey linked in the description. It's 5 questions. Please do it. It'll make the podcast better. Daniel, really quickly, where can our listeners find you at?
Bucketman1982 on Twitter and EllenRodder82 on Instagram.
Chase, where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me at VamosOCSC on Twitter and ChaseWCrowley on Instagram. Come on, City!
And Adam, where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at KosherTacoTruck.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. It's been a pleasure. And vamos, Orlando.
Vamos. Take it away, Adam.
Orlando, esta noche
tenemos que ganar.
You. Oh, Orlando!